What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Well, back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a comment or a question, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Braving the elements with me today, my producer, Melissa Davis, as usual. Hello,
hello,
Melissa.
Hello, hello.
And sitting in with us, the Film Yap is here, Christopher Lloyd, and a man who doesn't want to talk about the past, Joe Shearer. I have not seen you since that news came out, where the Cardinals hitting coach shocked the world with news that everybody already knew. So, hi, Joe. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you very much. And thanks for mentioning that, by the way.
I know. Well, keeps you from having 500 people at spring training. Chris, I just saw you
a few hours ago,
so we got to see I'm not calling it. It's actually called, we had a press screening of
The Last Station,
but we have a nickname for it, but I don't think we should really say it on the air.
What is the nickname?
Chicken Love with Helen Mirren, I guess is
I guess you'll have to wait to Matthew's review to hear all about that.
But we're not going to talk about that this week because it's not opening. Yeah. We have snipers. Make sure we don't talk about it. Anyway, we have a busy week. We got Winefest coming up. Bad news, they canceled the screening of The Dirty Dozen at the IMA tonight. So, but thank you to Ann Laker for willing to read my introduction. However, next week, shameless plug, at the IMA at 7 o'clock a week from tonight, I will be there introducing The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Wow.
Or also known as the I Heart Catherine Deneuve show, as we'll get to. But we're going to talk about the Oscars in a little bit. We're going to talk about movie Badasses in a little bit and the death of producer David Brown briefly in a moment. But I was worried, I've said before, you know, when one of the advantages to not getting everything at the end of the calendar year is that, you know, the Oscar contender movies trickle down throughout the months of January and February, and you get to miss some of the movies that are put out in January and February on purpose. And, you know, when Crazy Heart opened, I thought, oh, that's it. We're done. We're going to have to go sit through the real stuff. And then the Oscars came out, and we have a bit of a little wave again with Last Station, and hopefully we'll get the White Ribbon. But one that's not nominated, but I was surprised that it came so quickly, is the new John Woo film.
Yeah.
Called Red Cliff, and apparently this is a two-parter, as I was told.
No, actually,
or is this a condensed?
This is the condensed version for Americans. There was a 4-hour version that played in Asian markets, and they did this 2.5-hour version for us.
And since the last 4-hour film that came out was Che, we're not getting this one. I think note to Criterion, please give us the 4-hour Red Cliff. At least 3 people in this room will watch it. So anyway, it's set in the 12th century, and it's an epic battle, and we'll give you a little sample.
In a country shaken by years of civil war, a powerful warlord's quest for domination threatens all who stand in his way. Now, the destiny of an empire and the fate of millions will depend on the fight of a few.
Now, generally, when I fade out something like this, I would play the whole trailer, except usually when you hear nothing but music, that means the film is very visual and usually bad. And this is not, for me, this is not the case with John Woo. And Chris, I my history, obviously I slept in history class. When is this film set?
I believe it's set in the year 208 A.D.
Not the 1200s. So I stand corrected. Correct the host. That's always a good thing. Okay, well, this is John Woo's return to Asia. He's out of Hollywood. It's about time, really. I've been a staunch defender of Mr. Woo's work, even if it's Wind Talkers or Paycheck, because it's one of I think he's one of those, you know, you love the vision and maybe not necessarily love all the work. And it was a good time for him to go and make a big budget. I mean, it's not Kurosawa. It's got some Wooisms. Yes, oh, yeah. There is a dove. But it's not in a dank alley.
Yeah.
It's actually something different. So I'll give him credit for that. Visually impressive. If you like epic sword films and fight scenes that aren't too silly.
Yeah.
But I actually really enjoy it. This was when I remember seeing the previews, and I was really hoping it would deliver. And for the most part, it does.
Yeah, and I would say something which our friend Ed Johnson Ott has said repeatedly. This is a movie that's meant to be seen on a big screen, which
yes.
All of us, we did not get to see it. We only got to see it on a DVD screener. So, you know, Ed talking about he went crazy trying to read the little type for 2.5 hours. But I would definitely go see this one on a nice big screen because it really is epic in scope and vision. It's a big movie that needs a big screen.
Absolutely. So, I'm sorry, Joe, did you see this?
I did not.
Okay. Well, I'm just.
I was not on that mailing list.
Oh,
actually, none of us were. I got it from Ed, and we've been passing it around.
See, folks, you're getting a little insight of what we have to deal with week by week. So, we have means of communication. If it was 1980, only we have a better disc. So anyway, but yeah, I'm wondering what he's going to do next. If he's going to stay in Asia, stay and keep making films out there. Because let's not forget, he gave us Jean-Claude Van Damme's best film and arguably his worst, and Broken Arrow, which fun, and Face Off, which has one of the most ridiculous concepts in cinema in our generation,
right?
But is fun as hell.
Right. It's like once you get past the concept, it's a great movie.
Yeah, and then there was Wind Talkers, and I think they're still licking their wounds of the cost of Wind Talkers on that one, and Paycheck was, well, you know. Yeah. So this is one of those cases that and he's not the only one. Ringo Lam and a few other Hong Kong directors have now returned to overseas and stopped making Jean-Claude Van Damme films, which are fine, you know, but no, I'm not what I'm saying. So overall, I guess this is a welcome return to John Woo. Here's my thoughts on Red Cliff. Now, I move the microphones to these gentlemen because, well, full disclosure, I'm directing a play, so my evenings are shot. So I'm now crying about morning screenings and Friday's screenings. So, but there's two what we call regular films that are opening in town. We have Dear John, and we have From Paris with Love. Gentlemen, where would you like to begin?
Well, I want to talk about Dear John. This is. How would you describe it? It's based on a Nicholas Sparks novel who did The Notebook.
Nights at Rodanthe, the weepy films. What surprised – I knew that. What shocked me was that this was directed by Lasse Hallström.
Yeah. The Swedish director who's done a lot of really good things, Chocolat.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Unfinished Life, and Hashi, also known as the Richard Gere dog movie that was at Heartland.
Right.
So,
which apparently is not getting a theatrical release, by the way, because it's coming out in video in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Man.
Yeah.
Ow. So tell us about Dear John.
So Dear John, it's I wouldn't call it a weepy necessarily, but it's about a soldier who meets a girl, sort of a classic boy meets girl.
And the boy and the girl are this time?
Channing Tatum and Amanda Seyfried. I believe I'm pronouncing those correctly.
Of Jennifer Rivers' Body fame. Mm-hmm. And
Big what? Love.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't
and Channing Tatum was in G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And Step Up, the dancing movie, and Step Up 2, and Fighting,
yeah.
A movie.
Wow. Called... Did you see all those, or you just knew that?
I just knew that.
I was like, I don't think any of those were screened for us in advance. Yeah. In fact, I know they weren't.
Yeah.
That's really either extremely impressive or extremely sad that you guys knew that off the top of your head.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. As soon as I got G.I. Joe, because I actually wound up renting that. Mm-hmm. But, wow. Okay. But, however, there was... There is a token name, and I have to mention this because he deserves the credit, even if the film is questionable. Richard Jenkins
plays Jenny
Academy
Jane's
Award
dad.
Nominee Richard Jenkins,
and he's really good in it. As he pretty much always is really good in any movie he's in. He's one of those actors that just, even if he's in a bad movie, he elevates it a certain level.
Because I think he plays the dad. Capital T, capital D.
Well, he's a dad, and he's a dad, you know, dad with a disease type of thing. You know,
another movie also coming out soon.
The father has some kind of a condition, which I won't reveal here, and it's actually sort of a subplot of the movie of, you know, friction between the couple about what's wrong with dad.
Well, let's give a listen and see how long we can take this.
Don't worry about it.
I'm Savannah.
John.
Nice to meet you, John. 2 weeks together. That's all it took. 2 weeks for me to fall for you.
Special forces, huh?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're on leave. I hope you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah, I think I am.
Full moon tonight?
It actually doesn't matter where you are in the world. It's never bigger than your thumb.
Hey, Bob. I got somebody I want you to meet.
I like your dad. He loves you. I can tell, even if you can't. The way people act around you, it's like they're scared of you.
Why don't you get your hands off me? I'm not really scared of who I used to be.
You don't scare me, John.
Well, you scare me.
Okay, enough of that. Now, I haven't seen it, so am I right, or should we just let the clip play continue? Or did we get enough of it?
Yeah, it's the sort of movie that like, watching the trailer really is like watching a two-minute version of the movie, and you pretty much get all the highs, and you get all the beats pretty much in there.
You mentioned the Jenkins character having a disease, and there's a shot of him on
a
hospital gurney. And I'm sorry, condition. I saw him on a hospital gurney, and I went, man, darn you, trailer-making guy.
Actually, I think he has a condition, and then he contracts a disease. I may have that wrong.
Sorry, Meredith Baxter, Bernie.
Yeah, it's really not a bad movie. It's not the sort of movie I would say avoid at all costs. It's got some interesting things going on with the Richard Jenkins character. It just really doesn't work too well. I mean, the movie is named Dear John, and it's about a soldier who gets sent off to war, and they're mailing each other. So is it much of a giveaway to say what happens?
Right. I would say, well, you know. I would say, what about Hallstrom as a director? Does he bring anything new to the date movie genre?
He does. And there is things in the movie that I liked. It's sort of the couple that's in it, they're at the center of the story, but they're not the only thing going on. And I guess I actually ended up liking the things in the circle going on more than the couple.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah. Channing Tatum, not to rag on anybody in particular, but...
But you will.
But I will.
But he can't act.
Well...
He's no Ryan Gosling.
Well, it's sort of like, at this point in his career, this is not something that he's really capable of. You know, he plays a special forces soldier, and so when he's doing the special forces soldier stuff, we believe that.
Uh-huh.
But when he's, you know, pitching Woo, not so much. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I don't want to say that he is never capable of this. But, you know, he maybe in 10 years he could do a movie like this.
Okay. Melissa, do you have any desire to see this movie?
No.
Okay. See, there we go. You have spoken.
Absolutely not. No.
So I got a feeling guys are going to get dragged to this one. So I would say, I would say find something, save it. Find something to pay. I had to do there's a thing I do called Dr. Soci Film Therapist with Abdul Hakim Shabazz, and his wife dragged him to Legion. And so I informed him that Zombieland came out on DVD this week. So paybacks are brutal. So
bank that one.
Yeah, I think so. I guess this is probably Chris's reaction to Dear John.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
And now we move on to a film from the director of Taken, which has now become the new name drop thing. So From Paris with Love.
Yeah, From Paris from Love with Love, which stars John Travolta. Actually, very similar movies, both directed, if I'm pronouncing his name right, Pierre Moulet.
Your French, yes.
Yes. Directed Taken last year with Liam Neeson. And they both play CIA agents who are brought to Paris for, you know, something that they didn't necessarily want to go there. But other than that, the movies go in completely different directions. You know, the Liam Neeson and Taken was all about, you know, restrained power and ability that's veiled but will be revealed.
But we have John Travolta, everybody's favorite bald Scientologist in this.
Yeah, his look is way over the top. Not only is he bald, but he wears like big hoop earrings, and he has I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Is it kafaya? That Arab headdress around yes. his neck. He wears it like a scarf. And he's just really strange. His character's name is Charlie Wax. And basically, he just shows up and just starts blowing people away. And, you know, an hour and a half later, it's the sort of movie where the characters themselves are actually keeping count of how many people Charlie has killed. And it's like, hey, you know, that's 26 in the last 24 hours.
I mean, there's no number at the bottom of the screen. Ding!
Not quite. But it's a really over-the-top performance and an over-the-top movie, and I was not expecting to like it. But it really is the sort of movie where you park your brain in neutral, and it's a lot of fun.
All right, we'll give a listen. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is also in this of the Tudors fame, and he keeps his shirt on, apparently. So here's a little sample of what Chris is talking about.
Yeah. I'm a man short, Reese. I need your help.
Sir, you do realize that I am not special ops certified.
We've got you working with our top operative, Charlie Wax. Besides, it's mostly driving Wax around.
Move closer!
Nail this job and consider yourself a member of the club. This time.
Reese, come on!
Stop! My prints are all over that car.
You want to stop in the middle of our getaway so you can wipe your prints and grab some files.
I'll be quick.
Quicker than this.
What the?
Work for you?
From the director of Taken and the producer of The Transporter.
Sir, Wax's methods aren't exactly regulation.
Let's order off the menu.
How many more of them do you think there are?
Census? About a billion.
John Travolta, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Who the hell is he?
It's this crazy partner they got me working with.
Tell me that wasn't some impressive.
Welcome to Paris, baby.
This time. From Paris with love.
Did you save the world today?
If only you knew, Caroline.
Okay, I actually like Taken, and part of it would help was Liam Neeson's performance, because if this starred one of the roided up mongoloids from the 80s, not playing for the Cardinals, but if it starred Jean-Claude or Stevens, nobody would care,
right?
And because it was an underplayed performance, and then massive ass kicking.
Yeah.
So that made it enjoyable. This looks like the director of Taken is trying to do a new thing with the buddy film. Is he? Does he? Do they?
I would say so. I think he's clearly going that direction. I'm not sure how much of a real buddy movie is, because the other character, the John Rhys-Meyers character, really sort of ends up fading into the background, because the Travolta character is just so in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes such an impression. And, you know, Travolta, as they say, you know, choose the scenery with glee.
That's nice.
Our friend Nick Rogers made a comment, I think on Facebook, that said Travolta's look was sort of akin to the love child of Freddie Mercury and Charles Barkley, which
that's oh, that is terrible. That's... Wow. Yeah, I know. We do Frank Caliendo impressions of Barkley here at Film Sociology. Nothing sacred.
Well, I'll just say this about the movie to sort of encapsulate, you know, what I think about it. It's the sort of movie where at one point in the movie, someone is revealed to be wearing a suicide bomb underneath their clothes, and they open it up, and you actually get to see some close-ups of the suicide bomb. And there's actually a little triangular sign in like bright yellow orange, and the sign says caution. And I kept saying to myself, what terrorist, when they're building a suicide bomb, says, I need to put a caution sign on this, just so everyone knows, to be careful.
Isn't this kind of like getting the swab before lethal injection? I don't know. Being pro-choice and pro-death penalty? I don't know. It's all in the time, I guess. So how ridiculous are the action scenes? I mean, all right, let's say... Redcliffe, I thought, was pretty restrained by John Woo standards.
This is a step below that. You know, I mean, obviously a lot of very quick cutting, A lot of things where it's obviously John Travolta, but you see John Travolta for a tenth of a second, so you're not sure how much of this was actually done all in a sequence. It might have been they just, you know, and then they edit it together like, you know, editing in a blender, and it looks impressive.
Okay. But it sounds, like you said, it sounds like just flip your brain off and you're okay.
A dumb, fun movie.
Okay, well, I guess this is Chris's reaction to From Paris with Love.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what is new on DVD. You can email me at msocey, M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis, and we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows, as voted on by music journalists across the city, and our on-track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. What's left of them? I still believe in them. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. The show is available as a podcast, so, you know, Monday at noon. Well, actually, if you're listening to this on a podcast, hello. Hope you have a good work week. shameless plug, next Friday, Friday the 12th, I will be at the IMA hosting the French musical, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Have Christopher Lloyd and Joe Shearer from the Film Yap sitting in with me, of course, with Melissa Davis. And we got some DVDs we need to go through. A surprise disappointment, I think a surprise hit, and one thing is just not a surprise at all, and a film that I was surprised didn't get more screen time. We'll start with the big film that had Oscar buzz for about 10 minutes, and it's the biopic Amelia with a 2-time winner, Hilary Swank. It's directed by Mira Nair. You got Ewan McGregor and Richard Gere, and she's got short hair in this one, and it's about Amelia Earhart. So let's give it a listen.
When I was a little girl, I'd spend hours just dreaming that someday I'd go to strange, faraway places.
Miss Amelia Earhart.
Why do you want to fly?
I want to be free. I'm going to fly around the world.
It can't be done.
Well, let's change that.
And she will change that. Now, I had high hopes for Amelia because I like everybody involved.
Yeah.
And I go back to a few weeks ago, Chris, when we talked about Julie and Julia. The fact that I liked that format because you had two stories going on at once. And a lot of people griped about, you know, if you took out the Amy Adams story, you would just have the, you know, they wanted the Julia Child story. You wanted 2 hours of Meryl Streep. I'm afraid if you had done that, you would get just another standard biopic. Hence, Amelia. And I feel really bad because I really like Mira Nair. I really like Hilary Swank, and she's good in it, but it's just another standard biopic. Or as Laura from Chicago says, I don't like biopics because they're movies about people. And I think it's because it's the standard biopic, and you have a love triangle that's not really all that exhilarating.
Yeah, the love triangle with the character played by Ewan McGregor really, really just falls flat. I mean, not much screen time for that character, and the movie was very heavily edited. They removed a lot of things from the story. Like the Richard Gere character was actually married when he first met Amelia Earhart.
Oh, didn't know that. That would have been interesting.
Amelia Earhart was actually engaged to another man when they first met and she first began her thing. So they really had to chop a lot of things out of the real life story, and I think it ended up sort of sacrificing the integrity of the movie. I mean, it's—I will say—it is a great-looking movie.
Yeah, Mirror Mirror. I mean, you know, everything from Salaam Bombay and Mississippi Masala and Monsoon Wedding, which I know Criterion just reissued. Yeah, it's always looks very impressive.
Yeah,
but
so what you're saying basically is we're gonna get the Oliver Stone Alexander recuts of this.
No, they're
over.
Not gonna. No, it's not. It's not that. Bat nut crazy, bat spit crazy.
It's a perfectly enjoyable movie. You know, I wouldn't not recommend it to anyone. If you're into history or pioneers in aviation, and she certainly was that.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the sequence where she's advertising for everything. And yeah. I now said, if the studio was right, they would have sent out the bizarre swag that you get from time to time. I would. Like an Amelia Earhart waffle iron. I think that would be absolutely cool. The 8-year-old went with me to this. She liked it. She liked the flying stuff. She liked the girl power message, and was really bummed when she learned about the ending.
Yeah.
So, and I will say when I saw this, there were some teenage girls in the audience who didn't know the story, and just like Emma, when they found out that she didn't return, they were kind of bummed out. So there's a little bit of glimmer of hope. But if you've seen enough biopics, like, well, we have, it's kind of standard operating procedure, which is kind of a shame.
I was struck by, if you've seen this movie, structurally, it's very, very similar to Spirit of St. Louis, the Charles Lindbergh story.
Jimmy Stewart.
With Jimmy Stewart, which is a very, very good movie. But structurally, it's very same. It's, you know, the frame is they're on their historic flight. Lindbergh's, of course, was successful and hers was not.
Right.
And then it's, you know, cutting back to, you know, basically the events in their life that led up to this flight. So I was struck by that, how structurally they framed it just the way they did the Lindbergh story.
Well, Melissa, I don't think Tommy Wiseau is going to rent Amelia anytime soon.
Maybe not.
No. Because it'll betray him.
Aww.
I know. Sorry, room references. We love those here at Film Sociology. Overall, this is how we felt about Amelia.
Otter, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Speaking of something that turned out to be a big surprise, and I mentioned it earlier, thanks to Abdul and his wonderful wife, Sharon, Zombieland is on DVD. And I was worried because after 28 days later, I know they're not zombies, they're rage-infested, blah, blah, blah. But I thought after that and Shaun of the Dead, I don't need to see a zombie movie for a good 10 years, and I was pleasantly proven wrong. This has Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Academy Award-nominated actress Abigail Breslin, and probably the best uncredited cameo in a long, long time.
Oh, yes.
You just could listen.
Planet Earth, home to over 6 billion people. Today, our very existence is threatened by epidemics, climate change, and dwindling resources. But those are the least of our problems.
And brains and just crashing and I'm gonna say if you don't know the celebrity cameo, well, I'm not gonna help you. Go rent it. What's the matter with you people?
Big hit this movie.
I know. I was
made almost $100 million.
Nicely done. Woody Harrelson's had a good year the nomination and being in a hit film and surviving 2012.
This was really Woody Harrelson's best on screen role in years, and obviously the one he just got nominated for an Oscar was The Messenger, which we haven't seen yet.
Well, but soon we hope.
But soon we hope. But seriously, when I saw this, I was like, wow, I have not enjoyed seeing Woody Harrelson on the screen this much in probably 5 years.
And it's just kind of a combination of, you know, a butt-kicking, natural-born killer thing and flaky Woody Harrelson as himself thing. And it's another – we have a buddy picture with two very unlikely people, Jesse Eisenberg. And I remind people, he doesn't sound like Michael Cera / Woody Allen. If you watch The Squid and the Whale, he talks normal. He's just – doing a little thing there, you know, and they're teaming along with the ladies in this. It's actually a lot of fun, and there are times where we complain about when the movie turns into what I call the big dumb video game. Well, they take that concept and run with it, and it's near the end of the film, and it involves Woody Harrelson in a roller coaster. And it looks like a big dumb video game. So for once, it's actually used for good, not for evil.
Just a little real world or digital world a parallel here is huge video game, real video game that I have played is came out a year ago called Left 4 Dead.
Uh-huh.
And they came out with a sequel that came out shortly after Zombieland aired. And one of the things was a huge long sequence that takes place in a... what's the word I'm looking for?
Amusement park
with the roller coaster, and there's a section where you run along the roller coaster and so forth. Very meta, that moment.
That's kind of cool. So, well, and this is one that they will have lots of goodies and extra things. And
yeah, the extras on the DVD are pretty extensive, long commentaries, making of, all sorts of stuff. It's a good disc to buy.
Cool. So there you go. Overall, this is our feel of Zombieland.
Now that was a good movie.
Yes. Now, it's all right. It's fine. We're only on the air. Okay, we move on to... It's all right. It's all right. It's loose. Now, this was a film I wanted to talk about because it didn't get enough... I don't know how many screens it opened nationwide, but this is one of two films that I bought recently, sight unseen. And that says a lot. Wow. The first one is, which hopefully I'll get to next week, if not the week after, the Australian film documentary, Not Quite Hollywood.
Oh, I've seen that.
Okay,
love it.
Well, yeah, I bought that. And I bought Big Fan, which, of course, is from the writer of The Wrestler, who's now also former Onion writer, who's now directing and writing this film. And it stars Patton Oswalt, everybody's favorite animated rat, and, you know, the second best thing about King of Queens. And the whole stand-up comic thing. And he plays a New York Giants fan, and what happens when the person you admire the most in the sports world beats the living daylights out of you.
Game day. Game day.
Here we go.
Let's get our seats.
Hello?
It's $5.
Yeah, have fun in your box.
I can't tell you how sick I am.
Let's go to my boy Paul in Staten Island. He always brings the leverage.
Hey, sports talk.
I can't tell you how sick I am of all these bozos.
Quantrell Bishop was in your face all day long hitting a receipt. Do you mind?
Yes, I do.
Go to bed, Mom.
Right there.
What's Ralph Bishop?
God, I wish I brought a Sharpie.
What's he gonna sign?
Who cares?
Let's go.
Somebody to see you.
We really wanted to just meet you, Mr. Bishop.
We came all the way from Staten Island.
We falling off or something?
No, no, we just
want to talk, man.
How long have I been here?
3 days.
What was the score?
How do you get a concussion when you got no brains? What this animal did to you, he's got to pay.
How much time could he get?
Maybe 3 to 5. Tell us everything that happened, and then we nail Quantrell.
Quantrell Bishop will not be eligible to play.
I think maybe I got amnesia.
Yeah, sounds like you have amnesia.
Lots of people get beat up every day. I don't see you out there suing for them.
None of them are my brother.
I'm not going to let you
kill this guy. After I wipe my...
You're a sick boy. You know that, Paul? You need help.
And you need 6,000 egg rolls to put all that stuff on.
There's basic stuff every person needs. Okay. Family, children.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it.
Where are you going? Paul.
Over time, we've seen many stand-up comics make the jump from the stage, the comic stage, to the screen. And, you know, a great example we think of is Richard Pryor, of how the stage, when they do a film, you only get a fraction of what they're actually capable of, which is why, you know, the three best films I can think of with Richard Pryor were the concert films. And Eddie Murphy's been through this. Chris Rock has gone through this most recently, although I'm excited about seeing Good Hair, which we'll talk about on a future show. But Patton Oswalt, who, by the way, it's if he's only remembered as the guy from King of Queens, that's kind of sad because there's so much more to him. He's got great stand-up material. But he's got two things under his belt right now. The voice of Remy from Ratatouille, not bad. And he's got this. And it was kind of a shame that this film didn't get enough theater time. I don't know. Maybe it played in two of the big three cities, and now it's on DVD. The Wrestler was my top film of last year, and one of the reasons why I loved it so much was that it captured that world so well, and Big Fan does the same. He plays a a parking lot attendant who calls sports talk shows all the time and is a regular, and he writes out his diatribe, and it's not the most clever material in the world, but this is his little world, and he's happy with it no matter what his family says, and it all comes to a head. We've heard stories of you never want to meet the people you idolize because you're afraid that they're going to turn into complete, you know, douchebags, and that's kind of this case, only, you know, he gets the snot beat out of him in this one. So it feels a lot like, and we talked before, and it was on Fresh Air as well. There are elements that you could say there are little comparisons to, say, Taxi Driver. There's little comparisons to King of Comedy, obviously, especially, Joe, when we talked about the mom interrupting the phone calls. Yeah. I was really, really impressed with this film, and I hope more people go and rent it.
Yeah, I was impressed with it, too. I saw some ads here and there. Like you said, there's been interviews around, but it didn't really get a whole lot of attention. But it's got, just like you said, a great, you know, it really captures that little world of him sitting in his little booth, you know, waiting for people to come pay for their, you know, their parking garage tickets. And you know, he scripts out this whole diatribe that he's going to, you know, spout out on the air. And you know, it's really the Jim Rome kind of crowd, you know, that he's he's a diehard.
Yeah, it's true. Although the second best film is, of course, Jim Everett beating the crap out of Jim Rome.
Yeah, but
what you get for calling him Chris.
Yeah, it's really funny to see kind of this perspective where, you know, he gets, you know, like you said, he gets the crap beaten out of him by his idol, and he's sitting there in the hospital, and, you know, he's, you know, most people will be thinking, lawsuit, I'm going to be rich.
And he loves the Giants so much, he's having second thoughts about it.
Yeah, absolutely waffles with the cops and everything. It's really an interesting little portrait, and like you said, it kind of delves into taxi driver territory there. Where he kind of goes dark a little bit later on, and without giving too much away, that there is a nice little twist at the end, like I think we talked about off air.
But. Indeed. So take a chance, go see this. I did. I bought it, and all you have to do is rent it. Yeah. Or buy it if you'd like, but I know there's a few outtakes. Kevin Corrigan was selected for random roles in The Onion this week. I don't even work for The Onion. I don't know what I'm plugging, but and there is the interview with writer director Robert Spiegel and Patton Oswalt from Fresh Air, which you can hear next on WFYI HD2 The Point. So anyway, overall, this is what I think a Big Fan.
Yes!
And we got one more film. We're going to keep it quick because it's Love Happens, a film that I think made number 10 on the worst 10 list for me this year. It's Aaron Eckhart, Jennifer Aniston. He's a motivational speaker. She's not. And guess what? The motivational speaker has problems. Give a brief listen.
Without further ado, Burke
Ryan. I'm feeling okay. How are you?
This is your moment. TV, radio, publishing, like Learjets.
You know that's not why I wrote it.
You do know that you're helping people.
So tell me, what motivated the book?
My wife died 3 years ago.
Never intended for anyone to actually read it.
Okay, you got the idea. let's cut that. All right, two things that still bug me to this day about this picture. One, I want to know what ventilating system this hotel has for the big walking over the hot coals. Because I've actually done it. I did it, and it was outside, not inside. And guess what? The motivational speaker has a big emotional breakthrough during a motivational speech.
Yeah.
And by the way, Martin Sheen's in this as well. So there's that moment. But who asked for this?
Yeah. I think the best way for me to review this movie in brief was that it came in the mail about a week or two ago, and I looked at the cover and I said, did I see this movie? Then I remembered that, in fact, I had watched the movie and just completely forgot about it.
Yeah, very cookie cutter. And trust me, I think motivational speakers are pretty worthless. And it wasn't even fun watching a motivational speaker have agony.
It was very disjointed. And I actually wrote in my review, there are two or three good movies in there. But
where?
They're in there somewhere, man.
Ideas for good movies.
Yeah,
oh,
but,
I see.
But they took 10 little bits and just crammed them together, and it was nothing.
And just watching them, as pretty as they both are, it's just not enough, folks. Sorry. So overall, now Melissa, my producer, just looked at the cover of the box. Are we right?
Which one was that again?
Love Happens.
I'm looking for
not
it.
Not Love Actually. Love
Happens.
Love Happens.
Well, they're all the same, right?
Something.
Pretty much. All right, let's see. Okay, yeah. Well, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
Thank Jennifer
you.
Aniston in an embrace, and she has nice hair.
Yeah, she always has nice hair.
There's some smiling going on.
There is some smiling, even though he is in complete agony.
Yeah. Pap happens.
That's right. So, well, thank you. Thank you, Melissa, from the female perspective and the producer perspective on that one.
No problem.
All right, here's what we think of Love Happens.
No! No, 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 no! No!
All right, let's take a short break and let's talk about the Oscars, David Brown, and cinematic badasses. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis, and we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our On Track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Oh, Roger! We're not alone.
We've got guests.
You've got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Speaking of which, hi, guys. Welcome back to Sociology. It's just always a nice cordial tie-in to having guests in the studio. This is Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Sosi. Melissa Davis is working the board. Christopher Lloyd and Joe Shearer from the Film Me App are here. And before we get to the Oscars, we need to salute, we need to raise our glasses to producer David Brown, who passed this week. He was 93.
Wow.
Man had four films under his belt for Best Picture Academy Award nominations. Jaws, The Verdict, A Few Good Men, and Chocolat. Also directed such things as, and I love the fact that his first film as a producer I own on DVD, the blaxploitation epic Willie Dynamite.
Nice.
Also directed Sugarland Express, The Black Windmill, The Iger Sanction, Jaws 1 and 2, MacArthur, The Island, the Michael Caine film, not the god-awful Michael Bay film, Neighbors, that disappointing one, The Verdict we talked about, Cocoon and Cocoon to Return, Target, Driving Miss Daisy, executive producer, The Player, Few Good Men, Cemetery Club, Canadian Bacon, The Saint, Kiss the Girls, Angela's Ashes, and Chocolat. So salute to David Brown. Well, gentlemen, the Academy Award nominations came out, and I know Chris's fingers have recovered from typing furiously all Tuesday morning. Nice stuff on Facebook, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
And, this year, of course, things are different. We have 5 animated features this time as opposed to 3, and we have 10 Best Picture nominees, and as I expected, the 5 animated are probably overall better than the 10. So here's the 10, and then we'll have a follow-up question. Here are your best 10 Best Picture nominees: Avatar, Blind Side, District 9, An Education, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Bastards, Precious, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. Gentlemen, let's put on the big boy pants. What are the 5 really?
The 5 really are the ones that also were nominated for Best Director.
I'm one of those that goes, I understand that logic. I'm one of those, I go with the screenplay aspect of that. Yes. Okay. So anyway, you're going with, in Director we have Avatar, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, and Up in the Air. That's your five?
That's the five that really are in competition.
All right, Joe, what are your five?
I would agree those are probably the five in competition. I would say those four minus Inglourious Basterds maybe for my personal pick. I might want to stick Fantastic Mr. Fox in there, honestly, which I would
I
like to do anyway in place of Up because I really think it's a superior film.
Okay. Mine are In Education, Hurt Locker, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. Yeah, I didn't put Avatar on. Come and get me. What are you going to do about it? If you put in A Serious Man, I'm going to put that in there. What the hell? Okay, let's get we'll get the niceties out of the way. What got screwed? I know what got screwed, but I want to hear what you think got screwed.
There's a lot that got screwed. Probably the one that off the top of my head is Where All the Wild Things Are.
Indeed.
Which got absolutely blanked, not a single nomination, which I understand it was a difficult personal film, not the sort of thing that everyone is going to like. But, you know, it's hard to say this is not bold, visionary filmmaking, whatever you thought of it. And to not see it even get nominated in the costumes or editing or cinematography sort of categories, that's just amazing to me.
I'm going to go with Chris's favorite, Star Trek.
A lot of people thought...
Were you pushing it for Best Picture?
A lot of people thought it was going to get a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it on our podcast. In all honesty, I would have been gloating for several days had it been nominated, but I kind of see why they didn't. I'll go with Fantastic
Well, wait a
Mr.
minute. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Well, there were blockbusters put in here, Inglourious Basterds and, well, Avatar.
Yeah.
And Blindside, that was also a big box office hit. I just... Okay, I'm with you guys on Where the Wild Things Are. Me personally, I also think Away We Go got juked. I would have put a screenplay in for that. And personally, I was really pressing for Maya Rudolph in the Best Actress category. And I do need to acknowledge for the second week in a row, Ed Johnson-Ott was right. I did rent Bright Star, and I think
Paul Schneider
should have been a Best Supporting Actor nominee. He's that good. I'm still pushing for Christoph Waltz, but he is that good in it. And I wonder why the Academy hates Ponyo.
Yeah.
Just a sweet little fish. And I wondered if when it was released and the fact that it got transferred from the Japanese studio to Disney, if that had any weird... you know, Bruce Springsteen, the wrestler type loopholes in it. I don't know, but I would have put that in animated features as well. This was probably one of the best years for animated films, and I thought it should have been a part of it.
Yeah, another one I could think of that kind of got left out was a screenplay nomination for 500 Days of Summer. You laugh. It was nominated for the Writers Guild.
A lot of people said that.
Yeah. The Hangover also got a Writers Guild screenplay nomination, wasn't really expecting that one to get an Oscar nomination, but still would have been nice.
Although Jeffrey from Indianapolis wrote on Facebook, he wished I think that was on there as well. Yeah. So that's a shame. But I actually am happy that In the Loop got in, and hopefully more people will notice that. Okay, so let's go through. It seems like this year the pattern for Best Actor is almost like last year, where Mickey Rourke was the emotional favorite, well-respected. In this case, he's returned, made a comeback, and they gave it to Sean Penn. It seems like it's the same way, only replace Rourke with Jeff Bridges and replace Sean Penn with George Clooney.
Yeah, except that in this case, the emotional pick is actually going to win.
I think so, too. I really hope so. It helps that this is actually one of his best performances.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's Jeff Bridges' absolute best performance of a career, but that's just because... he's been so good in so many movies
and
for 40 years.
And he's so due.
Yeah.
And you get a due. There have been people who've gotten their just dues. We know. Hi, Denzel. Hi, Al. But this one's really, he's really that good in it. And you know, besides, he should have been canonized for The Big Lebowski. We all agree on that. And I think leading actress, I think best actress, there is no favorite.
I think there is a favorite now that's emerged. It's Sandra Bullock.
Makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Now, I personally don't mind having Sandra Bullock nominated. I thought The Blind Side was a good movie, not a great movie. And I thought she was really good in it, and it was a real departure for her usual sort of romantic comedy or woman in distress roles.
Okay.
So I don't mind seeing her in there, but I don't think that was the performance of the year. But at this point, you know, she's won the Golden Globe, she's won the Critics Award, and she won, what was the one they just had? What was the...
People's Choice. Nobody cares about that. Golden Globes? No.
No, it was the Golden Globes. What was the one that she just won?
The MTV Movie Awards.
MTV, yeah.
I don't know. But that's right, because, well, you know, Helen's won, Meryl's won. I thought
the SAG Awards, that's what she
won. Oh, SAG, okay. Yeah. And then you have the two newcomers, Carrie Mulligan and Gabby Sidibe, who, you know, I think it's the fact that they got nominated right off, their first time out the gate. That's pretty good. I still want Meryl.
Yeah.
She's that good.
If you'd asked me 4 months ago, I would have said that Carrie Mulligan for An Education was the favorite because it just was such great buzz. But the movie did not get a huge release, did not get a huge reaction, so that movie's kind of faded.
And actually, An Education was re-released. And
today.
It is re-released here today. So go see that.
It is a very good movie.
Yeah, and I think also to a certain degree, Alfred Molina should have got some recognition in the supporting actor, but that's just me.
Yeah, there was a really heavy push this year. A lot of really great supporting acting performances. I would have loved to have seen Paul Schneider from Bright Star in there. I don't know about Matt Damon in Invictus. He was good in it.
I think Invictus surprised, because I thought him and Morgan Freeman getting a nomination surprised me. It's a good film, not a great film. You know, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah,
but
it's sort of a stolid, dramatic picture. I was surprised by Morgan Freeman getting in there. I really didn't think it was a particularly commanding performance by Freeman. The accent kind of went in and out.
But I didn't think of this film the same way I would of Million Dollar Baby or Shawshank or any of his other home runs.
Exactly. The other movie that we should probably talk about that it seems to be fading is Up in the Air, which just two months ago I would have said this is the
best
juggernaut.
Picture, right.
Nothing will stop it. And at this point, it does not look like it is in the running at all. I would say it's between Avatar and The Hurt Locker for Best Picture and Best Director as well. It will probably pick up screenplay.
Yeah, because it's
One good indication, I had this in my Oscar piece, is the Oscar voters tend to vote in packs.
Right.
And so what happens is the quote-unquote minor categories, cinematography, makeup, costumes, editing, those sorts of things, tend to get carried along. So like you have like a Slumdog Millionaire movie that people just really love, it gets nominated in all of these other minor categories, and that indicates that the depth of the support for the movie is really there. And Up in the Air, other than it got Best Picture, Director, Screenplay, and 3 acting nominations, and no quote-unquote minor category nominations,
right,
that's an indication that the support for this movie is wide but not deep.
See, Vera should have done the scene. And everything to be so.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. That's a subplot us doughy white guys were clamoring about later. We love you, Monique, and we know you're going to get it, but man.
Yeah. Best use of stunt butt.
Yeah. And a tie. But, of course, I'm still waiting for the actress, supporting actress pillow fight, but that's never going to happen. Even if Monique wins, she's just bully over, but that's all right. Animated feature, we've got to bring up Coraline, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Princess and the Frog, Secret of Kells. Will that come to town?
What's
and
hope?
Up.
Yeah. So, I don't think I think I'm speaking for a lot of people when I was watching them, the nominations live, and they said, Secret of Kells, and I said, what?
Yeah.
Never even heard of the movie. Didn't know anything about it.
So hopefully that's a chance for something to come up. And you know, I want Kathryn Bigelow to just pound James Cameron with her award.
I hope she will win. I think she will win. I think it was the masterpiece of her career. I think it was the most amazing directing job of the year. So let's hope. But jumping back to the animated film category for just a second, interesting thing is that now that we've got the 10 nominees for Best Picture, and we did, in fact, for the second time in history, get an animated film nominated for Best Picture, Best
Correct.
Overall Picture. But since it was Up that was nominated, doesn't that translate that isn't it pretty much a mortal lock now to win the animated category? Because obviously if people love some other animated movie enough, wouldn't they also have voted for it for Best Picture?
That's a good question. And it also got a screenplay nomination.
Yeah.
And I think Fantastic Mr. Fox should have got an adaptation nomination, but that's just me. I don't know. That's interesting.
I think it is an indication that Up is pretty much guaranteed to win animation.
There wasn't – when Beauty and the Beast got nominated, I don't think there wasn't an animated category at that
time. They basically created it for that movie and others that have been coming out. And then when the Pixar movie started coming out in the mid-90s, they basically said, we have to do this.
Well, this should be interesting. So it won't be completely all about blue things. So there'll be something worth watching on March 7th.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would have said Up in the Air was pretty much a lock. So now it looks like it's between Hurt Locker and Avatar for Best Picture.
Okay, we'll talk more about the Oscars because we got a month, and that's what we do here at Film Sociology. On the AV Club of the Onion, every Friday they have a thing called Ask the AV Club. And this week's question was, name your favorite badass, in this case it's television or movies, and they asked the group. So here's some examples that they went through movie-wise. They talked about Michael Douglas in Falling Down. They talk about General Zod, Terrence Stamp, of course. But they also mentioned a Limey, which me personally would have preferred. The Bride, Uma Thurman. Captain Ahab, I thought it was pretty good. Daniel Day-Lewis in the aughts between Gangs in New York and There Will Be Blood. And by the way, go rent Gangs in New York again. Give it another shot. Darth Vader, of course. Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glenn Ross.
But he doesn't actually kick anybody's butt.
Verbally, he does. Yeah. I think mammoth dialogue sometimes can hurt more than an actual fist, depending on who's giving that to you. Joe Pesci in Goodfellas and Casino.
That's a good pick.
Toshiro Mifune in Yojimbo. Oh, I love that. Lee Marvin in Point Blank, one of my favorite revenge films of all time. So that's from the writers. And, of course, you go and there's like 1,000 postings now at the time of this show of people of various degrees. What comes to mind with you guys? I want to see if it – because I jotted down a bunch of names on this page. See if
we named a lot.
Well, what about match. John McClane? I didn't hear that name.
Somebody did mention Hans Gruber. So you're close, I guess, in that one. What else?
Butt kickers. I don't know. I mean, are we talking specifically about people who have a villainous aspect to the character?
Not necessarily, because you know, like Mad Max is mentioned. Somebody mm-hmm. mentioned Denzel in Training Day and Man on Fire. The Wild Bunch was one that comes to mind for me.
Oh, what? That's a good pick.
Yeah. Seth Gecko.
All right, that's good too.
Love me from some From Dusk Till Dawn, I gotta tell you.
That was on there as well. Somebody wrote Lee Van Cleef in anything.
How about Ash from the Evil Dead movies?
Bruce Campbell got on there. What for me I think it was from like page 7 of the Onion page, but Spencer Tracy in Bad Day at Black Rock.
Yes. Oh wow.
One-armed judo chopping. The guy just punches out Lee Marvin and Ernest Borgnine with one hand. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Emma Peel, yeah. Yeah. I don't care any version on that one. What else we have here? Well, Clint Eastwood in just about anything.
Yeah. Well, basically anything pre-1995. He's kind
well,
of
I think Gran Torino, he's pretty yeah. badass in that, too.
Really? Yeah. Doesn't he get his butt kicked? I thought he did.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen the YouTube clip where they, this is from the same people that gave you, they cut The Shining like it's a romantic comedy family. But this time they meshed in the audio trailer of Gran Torino with Up. See, thank you for you people out there doing it for us so we can at least – we don't have to make it. All we have to do is watch it. So, Sergeant Barnes from Platoon.
Ooh,
of course, Arlie Emery in Full Metal Jacket. Oh, you know, there's a lot of great ones. Javier Bardem. Somebody wrote Yosemite Sam. Tom Cruise in Collateral. I mean, this if you get a chance, go to The Onion. You could spend at least a couple of days, I think, with all this stuff out there.
Wow.
Well, gentlemen, I think time is just about up. We have – and Up is also up for this picture. But we have Wine Fest going on in just a little bit, so I'll be taking my leave over there. On behalf of Melissa Davis, Christopher Lloyd, Joe Scheer, plug the Film Yap for you.
www.thefilmyap.com. All sorts of great stuff. Actually, just a new thing we have up is an interview with Michael Stuhlgaard, star of A Serious Man. That's Absolutely. Up as of just a couple hours ago.
Yeah. So, well, on behalf of everybody here, I'm Matthew Sosi. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.